It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark.
And I am not Steven.
No, Joe Pakovitz is here, comic book historian. The reason Steven is not here is because he, right now, is breaking down his booth at C2E2. It closed less than an hour ago, and we ran right into the studio to cover it. Last year, if you might remember, long-term listeners, we tried to be on the floor. I was very inspired by some of the stuff John Suntress does, of just going up and down our alley, recording people on the iPhone and putting that together. It didn't work last year. we had like a couple of things that came in drips and drabs. Everything was varying, audio quality. And we ended up talking to Jamal Eagle on Skype for a half an hour. And that was great. It was a great episode because of that. But we didn't really nail the C2E2 coverage angle. So this year we decided, let's do a wrap-up right after, as if it was one of the movie premieres.
Exactly.
So Steven stayed up for 32 hours straight.
He got two hours of sleep in 38 hours or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he didn't look that good today.
Tired. I thought he was going to fall asleep standing up when I talked to him.
Yeah, he's very tired, but he said the booth did really well. They broke even by Saturday mornings, and the turnout was really great.
Yep.
I was discussing this with a few people. It seemed like a bit of a smaller show. It seemed like a big small show rather than a New York.
It did seem like it kind of topped out, and you know, maybe other competing events limited some of their availability.
I think part of the thing was WonderCon was last week.
Yeah,
and that's in Anaheim, so you got all the West Coast guys there. I mean, you know, Jim Lee was there last week. Bruce Timm was there last week.
Yeah, they're not going to fly out the very following week.
For no, this, but so. We did have Stan Lee.
We had Stan Lee, and boy, he was in fine form.
Yeah.
He brought his A game.
Yeah, he was very Stan Lee. And Scott Snyder was there.
Yes.
There were some very decent, very strong guests there. But it was an interesting experience. Both Joe and I originally planned to only go on Sunday. And then we ended up getting weekend passes. So Friday, we decided at the last minute, we took off work. And Joe, you already had off work.
Yep.
So we ran over there and mostly just shopped.
Right.
We shopped for about 4 hours. And then Saturday, you didn't go. And I ended up coming at the last minute and going to the Spider-Man panel and the Batman panel and chopped.
Yeah.
And then today...
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah. Today we went to the Stan Lee panel and chopped.
And shopped.
Yes. We ended up going all 3 days. And yeah, it was an interesting feeling show. How did you feel, Joe?
I was looking for those smaller panels that I sometimes like to go to. I mean, some of the bigger panels, like the Stanley, I mean, those are fun, you know, the big events where you know something's going to happen. But I just didn't see a lot of those interesting, quirky, smaller panels. I did go to see the William Shakespeare Star Wars panel, where somebody had taken the Star Wars scripts and rewrote them in the style of William Shakespeare. So he's doing iambic pentameter and things like that, and in the language, and he did a couple different things with it.
Did they do whole movies?
No. This was books.
Oh, okay.
Books, quirk books. I forget the gentleman's name who wrote them, but...
Did they cover like one...
One book was one movie.
One film? Okay.
Right. So he's gotten Star Wars, he's gotten Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi is going to come out in July. And he was really interesting because they did some readings. He brought in up members, people from the audience to have reading, and that was pretty funny too. And he did, I guess one bit he did in the original book was the two guards who are guarding the Millennium Falcon when the sweep team goes in and the, you know, obviously, Luke and everybody clobbers them, and they go, and Han Solo goes, "Hey, can we get some help up here?" And the two guards go up and get clobbered. And he did a scene where those two guards were talking amongst themselves, and one guy was basically saying, "Hey, you know, wait, that was the ship where that one kid disappeared from Tatooine, and the old guy, and the robots, and now it's here. Do you think they might still be on board?" But this is all in Shakespearean language, so yeah. It was twice as funny. I'm doing a really shitty job, but the guy was really interesting, and my wife, who came with us today, bought both of the books that are currently out, so I'm looking forward to reading those.
Yeah, cool. When you said the two guards, that's something really fucking, I was really hoping they would have been the two guards in the Holy Grail.
It was very much like that.
Not to leave the ship, even if they come and get him. So until they come and get him.
No!
Where are you going? We're going with you.
We're going with
no,
you.
No, you go in the ship and make sure no one...
You make sure E didn't leave.
No, I did not go to that. I mostly went to... The big stuff was yesterday. Spider-Man and Batman were back to back, and they were both great. Spider-Man, Dan Slott was not there, but the editor was there. Mark Waid was there to talk about Daredevil.
Okay,
and some of the artists were there. But I thought it was an interesting turnout compared to the panel we went to at C2E2 2 years ago, where Dan Slott was there. And I said, well, let's go, because we both read Spider-Man.
Right.
And Dan Slott is hilarious, if you ever hear him on John Santress' Word Balloon. So I was like, he's going to be great. And we went in, and it was
disappointing.
But it was a small room, and it was a third full.
Yeah.
And they were mostly just talking about a lizard arc they were doing. This year, a big room that was like two of the small rooms with the wall taken out, packed to the back.
Well, because they're coming off of one of the greatest runs in... really the book's history with Superior Spider-Man. So I'm not surprised that generated a lot of buzz, and it's perfectly timed because they're going back to Peter Parker and Amazing. Before, yeah. All they had was a lizard. And their tagline was, you know, you can never go back, but everybody's like, well, it's a lizard. We've seen him a gazillion times before.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what it was. They didn't even talk about the movie. I mean, in the one 2 years ago, Amazing Spider-Man was coming out.
Yeah.
And they kept tying into, oh, the movie's coming. This one, they didn't mention the movie at all. It's just, here's the Spider-Verse events that's going to happen. Here's the digital comics we're going to do. Here's the original graphic novel that Mark Waid and James Robinson are writing together. James Robinson was on that panel.
Oh, good.
But the interest in Spider-Man is so much higher. And I find it interesting because I look at some of these characters as evergreen. I'm also much of a hardcore loyalist. So I stick with characters through bad runs. You know, sometimes I keep buying it, sometimes I quit, but then I'm immediately back when a new team takes over and I buy the bad issues in the 50 cent bins.
Right, and I think the interest in a character may actually be better gauged by how many new people are hopping on board. And that's why I want to wonder if this second go-around of films is really bringing in people as much as the first one, because, you know, how many people are going to go see this who didn't see the first run?
Right, and the first run's not that old. It's not that old.
It's 10 years.
It's not like, you know, there's a generation of people that watch Christopher Nolan films that may not have even seen the Tim Burton films. But the Sam Raimi films, I mean, they ended like 4 or 5 years before these began.
Yep.
Yeah, Spider-Man is next week. We're going to cover it next week. We're all going to go because we love Spider-Man.
We all love Spider-Man.
Ben wants to see it in 3D, so we're going to do that.
It's 3D.
Yeah, well,
would you like some pancakes?
Yeah, well, the way Ben put it, he said, "I want Spider-Man to shoot webs at us." And I was like, "I want that too." Yeah, all right.
Awesome.
I will pay for the glasses. Oh, man. But yeah, there's not as much anticipation.
Well, I think the book is driving it this time around.
Yeah,
and
really
I think that from your description of the panel, they've realized that the book is actually going to maybe even drive the movie rather than vice versa.
Maybe. And right after that, the Batman panel was next door. So I went to that, and that was standing room only. And that was a room at the same size as the Spider-Man one. Wall was taken out, two big rooms, probably fit 1,000 people.
Well, with Batman, you have a movie franchise that's going back to the 80s that has a really, really high hit-to-miss ratio. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you got Batman and Robin that everybody wants to forget, but really, for a series of movies, the quality has been so high that I think that series has held its interest much better than any like a normal run of movies can expect. Maybe the Avengers is going to top that, but and Batman's always mega popular. He's always popular.
And that's
it.
Right now,
away.
Well, right now this is the 75th anniversary of Batman, and the books, as you were saying with Spider-Man, the books really are driving it because we're not going to see the next Batman movie is going to be the Superman Batman that everybody feels ambivalent about. It's not a true Batman movie.
Yeah.
And it's a couple of years down the line. We don't have a movie. The last animated series where the Batman was taken off the air. I'm sure there'll be another Batman series, but it's not going to be this year. So really all that's happening right now is are the books. And the books are at an all-time high. So Scott Snyder was there. Justin Gwynn is there. Pete Tomasi was there. Mm-hmm. Pat Gleason was there. It was a really interesting panel because it reminded me, I'd say 75% of my monthly comic budget is going to Batman. Yep. First, partially because he's my favorite character. Partially because they're doing so many books, but there's so many books that are good.
I was just going to make that point. You have so many books that are good, and it's bleeding over into the crossover series. So you've got Forever Evil with Arkham War, which was good.
Yeah, it was. And that was Pete Tomasi.
Yeah.
Who was underrated. But as they went through each book, they spent a lot of time talking about Batman Eternal, which was, of course, the big weekly mm-hmm. series. And it's a big gamble because you have a Batman book every week already.
Right.
So to get people to sign up for a Batman weekly, it feels like you kind of should put all the titles on hold. And if this Batman weekly is going to be such an important story, as Scott Snyder is saying, that's going to change the Batman mythology, maybe that should be the only focus. Why are you... If all the major stuff is happening internal, then what could possibly be happening in Batman and Detective and Batman and Robin that's enough to hold your interest? And actually, they did not cover Detective in the panel, which made me a little nervous because the team that was doing The Flash had just took over.
Taken over, yeah.
And it looked nice, but the story was kind of pedestrian. And to be honest,
Which matches that team's record on The Flash.
Yeah, I didn't...
Decent, kind of satisfying if you're already a Flash fan, but it's not going to make you really, really love that character.
Yeah, and I know you were reading it. I read it for a while, and I kept falling off. Like, I just, the next issue, I don't have $3 right now. And we just skipped. Are you still with it?
Yeah, I'm still with it.
Okay, so you never missed an issue.
I haven't missed an issue yet.
And they have a new team on now. Yeah. There now. Rob Vendetti, who's also writing Green Lantern, is writing it.
Right, and it's, you got to give a new creative team time to really get their feet on, underneath them. So, I'm giving it a little bit of time. I'm just wondering if they're looking at Batman and thinking, okay, if Marvel can do it with Spider-Man in the 90s, where you had 18 books and you had a Spider-Man book coming out, every week, sometimes twice, two different titles coming out at the same time. I wonder if they're thinking, we have enough people who just read Batman that we can do this, because they're not really competing for those $3-4 per issue with, Power Girl or even Wonder Woman. They're competing against the other Batman titles and maybe Nightwing and Batgirl and Catwoman, but are those peripheral Batman books selling well enough?
Well, that's the thing. There's been a Batman book every week since 1989. I think since there's been three Batman books since the 60s.
Oh, you get Detective Batman,
Brave and the Bold. Brave and the Bold became Batman and the Outsiders, yeah. And then Batman and the Outsiders became The Outsiders and stopped being a Batman book. But then in 89, you had Legends of the Dark Knight. And then in 92, you had Shadow of the Bat.
Yep.
And then Nightwing and Robin. I mean, you've always had this big family. But now here comes, not only are you reading 2 to 3 Batman books a month like I am, now you have a weekly series on top of it.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the center. So yeah, they're doing a lot of work to sell this. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I'm on issue 3. I like it. I feel like this is a Batman story I can keep going with. So part of my budget goes, well, if this is the main Batman story, maybe this is all you should read. But you know what? I still really like Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on Batman. I'm not crazy about Zero Year, but yeah. I like the work they're doing. I really, really like Batman and Robin. When Damian died, I thought, well, that's the end of this book.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a really interesting... Are you reading Batman and Robin?
No, I'm not.
They did a really interesting thing with it where Tomasi and Gleason... First of all, they didn't get to kill Damian because Grant Morrison did it.
Yeah.
So they just had to react to it. But they made it, for a couple of issues, they made it about Batman's grief. And then they did a Two-Face story, and I was like, where is this book going? And then all of a sudden, they turned it into Brave and the Bold, but with a common through line of Batman trying to find a way to bring Damian back or deal with Damian. And that storyline is taking him to... run into Wonder Woman, to run into Aquaman, to run into Frankenstein.
Yep.
And it's become Brave and the Bold without being these one-off stories. And now what they're doing, which they announced this week, but they talked about at the con, is they said they're going to bring Robin back.
Okay.
But they don't say who Robin is. They just say, in the summer, we're doing a Robin Rises one-shot, and then the story's going to continue in Batman and Robin. And by December, which they announced at the con, they're going to do another Robin Rises one-shot, and Batman will have a Robin.
Yeah.
But there are so many candidates out there now, we don't know who that is.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, because we know Damian, first of all, Damian being part of Ra's al Ghul, you could always just dip him into Lazarus Pit.
Yeah.
The last panel of Batman Incorporated was Ra's al Ghul in a lab looking at a whole warehouse of test tube Damians.
Yeah.
So you could unleash another one. But by the same token, Dick Grayson's not Nightwing anymore.
Nope.
He's going to be Grayson, which they talked about. I don't think I'm following that because it's like Dick Grayson, Agent S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But, you know, they could run that for six issues, and then he's like, you know what? I'll pick up the legacy and be Robin again. Carrie Kelly is floating around there in Batman and Robin. They haven't paid her off. Harper Row has been built up, and we know in Batman Eternal she's going to be a character called Bluebird.
Mm-hmm.
So she might be Bluebird for a while, become Robin. Tim Drake has been floating out there as Red Robin, which I feel is a waste of a great character. And in the New 52, he was never Robin. So maybe it's time for him to be Robin.
Yeah, to become Robin. Yeah.
So there is a lot of mystery to play. It's not like when they killed off Bruce Wayne, it's like, all right, when's he coming back and how?
But it sounds like each book, like you said, it has its direction. It's not one-shots or small story arcs. It has a direction. One of the reasons why, you know, I didn't pick up Wonder Woman as quickly as I did was because before, Wonder Woman was one of those books that was never really going anywhere.
It was aimless.
It was aimless. Now, with Azzarello, that book is just taken off into a direction.
And that's wrapping up, isn't it?
I think that is wrapping up.
I think he's going to wrap up story, his run,
because
yeah.
they've, you know, the Firstborn is finally, spoiler alert, Firstborn is finally offed Apollo, and now Diana has taken over a certain god's job, which, who I shall not name in case anybody hasn't read it.
Sounds very Thor.
Yes, it sounds. Well, they're going back to the mythology, which
explains why you like it.
Exactly.
Because you're a huge Thor fan.
I'm a big Thor fan, and they're going back to that Greek mythology roots, which is fantastic.
Yes, but it was but the panel itself was really great. No major news, and I think that was a problem with WonderCon. WonderCon has bigger guests because it's close to Los Angeles. I mean, I saw a video this week of the Batman panel at WonderCon, and it was Bruce Timm and Kevin Smith and Jim Lee and, you know, the editor of Batman 66 and this panel was the guys doing the books now. So yeah. I think any major announcements of Batman will come out then. They did let slip at WonderCon, which I'm very excited about. We know the Batman 66 series is coming out on DVD, and the moderator let slip that it was DVD and Blu-ray.
Ah,
and
nice.
If you've ever seen the original Star Trek or the original Twilight Zone on
Blu-ray,
where
they reworked them and they're gorgeous.
Even though they're a TV show, anything shot on film, which Batman was, really benefits from a Blu-ray treatment. Yeah. So I'm hoping this is the be-all, end-all. Because I have a bootleg set that I bought at C2E2 3 years ago. Yeah. So I have these episodes in terrible condition.
Right. Somebody just videotaped them off the TV or something. Yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty much. But
that's the thing that I have also noticed, is that there wasn't much news even outside the Marvel DC superhero universe. You didn't have anything going on with Doctor Who. Marvel,
Doctor Who, we know, is not coming back till August, right. So I feel like there's nothing to really say.
You know, even Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah, they had one of those big, huge banners, and they had a couple things at the Marvel booth about it, but you didn't have, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy panel with any of the stars showing up or anything like that. So I think that movie is too far away for them to really start hyping it now. They probably want like a 2 month window at the max.
Yeah, and you know, for Marvel Studios, and it's very obvious that Marvel puts all its weight behind Marvel Studios productions to the detriment of anything at Fox or Sony.
Yeah.
Because I remember in years past, we had Chris Hemsworth at C2E2.
Yes.
Like the week before
Thor came out.
Yeah. And we've already, Captain America's been out a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I keep saying about WonderCon, that's in LA. So like if Chris Evans was going to do a convention, is he going to fly to Chicago or is he going to do one in LA?
Yeah. He'd be in either New York or LA. He's not going
to
come to Chicago.
Yeah. And Marvel just doesn't feel the need to really push Spider-Man or X-Men. So, and you're right. Guardians is
too far out.
So yeah, I feel like we we would have had a bigger show if we had bigger news. But it was a good feeling show. I felt like last year, it had doubled in size every year since it started in 2010. Mm-hmm. 2010, it was a fairly small convention. It looked like Wizard World. And it just kept doubling and doubling, and it felt like this is going to be the New York, because it's Reed Expo that runs New York. They do a fantastic job with it. And then it kind of felt like last year it kind of hit the wall, where it almost got a little too big for its britches, and it got a little unwieldy. And just the energy in the air last year was a little odd. 2 years ago was phenomenal. It was one of the best conventions I ever had. And we went in there trying to top that, and we were like, yeah, what's this? And I felt like this year it kind of pulled back a little bit and played to its strengths.
Yeah, last year was very, very corporate and very, very high end. And you had a lot of peripheral stuff that you're like, okay, I know this is supposed to be one of the big tent cons that has everything from Ren Faire to the straight up Marvel DC stuff. But there were still some things last year I'm like, why is this here? This con seemed a bit more focused. It felt like a big little con. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree. It felt more focused on the comics. I mean, there was a good amount of anime and there was fantasy.
Yeah.
Lots of cosplay.
Lots of cosplay.
And I'm finding that cosplay. It's interesting. Cosplay has become such a force. This con, as you were saying, was a big little con, and I kept thinking back to cons I did in the mid '90s. And in particular, like, I did a Philly con and a Motor City con in, like, 96.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept flashing back to that because I realized this year's C2E2 kind of felt like those, where you had the space to walk around and there was a bunch of stuff going on. And,
right.
You know, and the Philly con had, like, Stan Lee, you know, signing. There's no panel. But it made me think of how back then I would see 2-3 people doing cosplay. Right. You know, there'd be a Spawn or a Batman. There'd be an anime. Steven has a motto about cosplay, which he said to me today on the floor. He goes, "If I don't know who you are, you're anime.
You're anime." Yep.
there was always a few of those, but I feel like partially it's the press, because every time there's a convention, those are all the pictures they take.
Of course.
I took more pictures of cosplay than I ever have, so I can put them on the Facebook page.
Facebook. And I was just going to say, Facebook is one of the big things driving that.
Yeah, check out the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page now, because we posted a bunch of pictures from the show, and honestly, I usually don't take that many.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking, well, I'll put it on the show page, and people will want to see it.
Exactly. People want to see it. And, you know, our friend Geek Girl, who does her Geek Girl blog, you know, she'll have, you know, 3-4 paragraphs on the con, but she'll have 38 pictures of all these, you know, wildly creative and great outfits.
Yeah.
You know, and people want to see it. People want to see what other
people
are doing.
I feel like 20% of attendance at these cons now are cosplay.
Although I wasn't there on Saturday when we went, we did Saturday last year, and it seemed like there were more events specifically geared at cosplayer that when I was reading the program for this year, I didn't really see all that much. It's like they were figuring that they've already maxed out on cosplay and are not trying to grow it anymore. It's big enough so that it's hit that critical mass.
Right. Right. And as you said, this one's a little more focused. So maybe they didn't feel the need to book as many cosplay panels I didn't see the Varian stage this year.
Right.
I didn't see really anything going on. You know, there's usually stand up and there's just like sword fighting.
Yeah, there was no singing Buffy.
Costume contest. No, it wasn't as big a media show as it had been, but it did feel good. I will say it was very well attended. It was big because, as you mentioned, Lauren was there all 3 days. I didn't see her.
No, I didn't see her.
Paul Booth was there. I didn't see him. Jimmy the Muscle was there. I didn't see him. All these people, basically all of our regulars on the show, I didn't run into because it's just so big.
Right. If you don't happen to catch them at the right time.
Yeah.
Even when I was trying to find people, like trying to find Art and Franco at their booth on Artist Row, I'm like, you know, half the time I went over there, they weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the other times that I found them, they were just surrounded by people. You couldn't get near them.
No, the one time I went there, only Franco was there.
Yeah. I did run into, big shout out to my old buddy, Jill Thompson, who's done fantastic work on Wonder Woman, Sandman, has her Scary Godmother series of books out, should all buy all of them right now.
I'm reading Grant Morrison's Invisibles Omnibus now, and I just read some of her old issues with him. She's done a lot of really great Vertigo work. And you guys went to high school together.
Yeah, we went to high school together, and it was nice reconnecting and seeing her again. She looks fantastic, doing really well. Nice to see a local kid done good.
Yeah. Our alley seem pretty broad and pretty big. I never get that deep into it. I kind of go through it looking for people I know. And that's when my interviewing skills fall apart. Because if I don't have an opening, I'm usually kind of just kind of stammering in front of the guy at a booth.
And the other problem is you're trying to hold a conversation in between people, trying to actually do business. And, the last thing you want to do is get in between an artist and their ability to make money and connect with, the rest of their fans. And so you're kind of, popping in and out. And finally, you're just like, okay, well, I'll see you later.
Well, and it's the same reason we don't do the podcast in the store.
Right.
And we talked initially about doing it. And then we realized, Stephen will be interrupted every 2 minutes to ring up a sale.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make people stand in the store for an hour until we're finished recording. And so you do get that experience at Artist Alley's. People want to buy prints. People want to have sketches done.
Yep.
I would have.
Well, yeah, the sketching is, that's blown up big time. People want those custom sketches by their artist.
I would have loved to. That's the one thing I didn't get to do. I actually didn't even find him. Dustin O'Gwynn was there, and he was on the Batman panel. I would have loved. I knew he was in Artist Alley. I never saw him when he was there. I would have loved to do a custom little Gotham sketch.
Yeah,
I
would have, that would have been awesome.
I would have done that. Yeah, because Art Balthazar did a Batman and Joker for Ben at Comics one day, and we have it framed in his room, and it's beautiful. And it's like, would have been nice to put a little Gotham next to that, and maybe Batman and Joker, and maybe that would be Ben's. That's not a bad idea. Maybe that would be Ben's thing, where it's just always Batman and Joker.
Well, maybe next year, if they're there, you can.
I need to make more of an effort in our salary.
Well, this year, we kind of joked about it earlier, was shopping, and one of the reasons it was all about the shopping was because there was a much better mix of grades of book dealers. John and I both went in with a plan. We were going to get concentrate on Grail books, because last year it was all the high-end CGC books, nothing for less than $5.
Yeah, the
book.
One deal we found was, I think it was Comics for Less, was last year they had the $2 books, and that was the best deal.
Right.
And I focused really hard on just covering all my recent Amazing Spider-Man holes from them, and that was kind of, and we were saying to each other, $2 is all we're going to get, and it's going to be $2 of recent books. We're not going to be... We go to a lot, as we talk about, we go to a lot of mini conventions that are in the area. Things like TCS, DanCon, MightyCon, ToyCon.
Yep.
They're the little one-day shows. They're almost flea markets where it's all dealers. Maybe there's one or two artists. Maybe there's cosplay. There's no panels.
No panels,
So, but what we usually clean up on are the quarter boxes.
Yes.
And for me, I find a lot of the secondary titles of the heroes I love. So I'm not going to get Amazing Spider-Man for cheap, but I could get a lot of Web of Spider-Man for a quarter, so I can fill those out. I'm not going to get Batman or Detective that cheap, but I can get Legends of the Dark Knight. So I'm knocking out all the secondary titles, especially in the 90s when crossovers are a thing. But you get more of the...
Well, I'm scattered all
second
over
the third place. Tier titles in there,
right? Because I get a lot of the fun books, like we're talking about the DeMatteis Giffen run of JLA, where we're gonna get these second stringers and put them together. We're not gonna have the big seven, and a lot of times those books are so much fun because the writers are having such a great time reworking characters without having that big massive weight of continuity and pressure on them,
or having to worry about another monthly title to contradict.
Exactly. And when we went last year, we were a little surprised by the fact that there weren't any of the $2 and under book dealers except for Comics for Less. So we modified our plans and said, okay, we're going to go for the Grail books this year and see what their deals are.
Yeah,
two things hit me. Number one, the prices on the upper end stuff have gone up considerably. Harley Yee had, 2 years ago, had Kirby Fantastic Fours in very decent shape, $5 each. We saw none of that this year.
No, no. There was, you know what, the $5 books were all 80s books.
They were all 80s books. And the second thing was, there were all of a sudden the 50-cent boxes, mm-hmm. the dollar boxes, the $2 boxes. So, you know, 5 minutes into our con, we hit Comics for Less, and our strategy was shot to hell.
Yeah, and the 50-cent guys, there were a lot of dealers that took a lot of square footage, which was nice. They weren't hemmed into just the single spaces.
Right.
And some of those guys, they were the guys that bring their Silver Age, and a lot of them are CGC'd, and a lot of them are really protected, and they're not coming down on their prices. But there were the guys that were like, I'm bringing 200 long boxes of 50 cent books and I'm getting rid of them. And again, I cleaned up on those for me, the secondary titles of big characters.
And even those, the quality was good. You know, sometimes
a lot of them were bagged and boarded
boxes. Yeah. You're practically getting the comic for free with that, but they were titles you heard of in runs that you kind of wanted. You know, they weren't things that you would pay $4 or $5 a book for, and they were in great shape. It's not like this thing's got the cover ripped off, and this one's, you know, some.
Yeah, because we'll go to Half Price Books, which is a chain here, which is great, and they'll have 50-cent books, but they're usually beat up, and they put the price tag on the cover.
On the cover, so you got to rip it off, and half the time you ruin the cover.
Yeah,
of the
and
book.
Then you go, well, it's only 50 cents here. Yeah. I was getting the Cassandra Cain Batgirls from like 2002 in near mint condition for 50 cents. So that was nice. So I came home every day with a stack of books. I found the one place you really had the variance, I agree, the Silver Ages, you couldn't find very good deals on Silver Age
Not
books.
At all.
I kept looking for particularly Amazing Spider-Man. I'm not that big a fan of Batman and Detective in the Silver Age because it's basically the Adam West show. It's mm-hmm. You know, pre-Danny O'Neill, Neil Adams, it's not the dark, moody, atmospheric stuff, which is one of the reasons I love Batman. So when I found one for cheap, even if it was in bad condition, I found my birth month Batman at the con for $2. I haven't taken it out of the bag of the board because the cover might fall off. But I have it.
But you got it.
But I found there was a major variance in 70s and 80s titles, though, because there were plenty of guys that had a book for $20, and I went across the aisle, and a guy had the same book in the same condition for $5.
Yeah, this con really, really drove home the wisdom of comparison shopping.
Yeah.
Because somebody would have a comic loose for $5, the other guy's got, you know, in a bag and board for, like you said, $20, $25, mm-hmm. and you really had to walk the floor first to find those deals. Comics for Less was maybe the exception to that because everything they had was in great condition and everything was $2. So you weren't going to run into that, you know, 50 cent Asriel, that last copy that you were looking for. It's impossible to find.
Yeah, I found the final issue of Asriel in a long box for 50 cents, which was great because Asriel's another Batman title. So it's within what I collect. But I have managed to collect the entire series of Asriel for 50 cents.
Right.
And that last issue was hard to find on eBay. It was $8. But somebody had it for 50 cents. And now they don't, because I do.
Yeah, and on the flip side, you know, I'm looking for my Grail books was Amazing Spider-Man 194.
The first Black Cat.
And a couple of years ago, I was balking at it when it was in the $50 price range. Now the cheapest they had was $75. Some of them in the CGC condition, or actually in CGC, were $125. And I was like, what on earth? I can go online and get it for cheaper than that. And I'll probably pay about $50 plus shipping.
Yeah.
So it's almost inverted in a way. The lower end stuff, you're going to find it cheaper than you can online. The higher end stuff, you're probably better off going online.
Yeah,
in some
and
cases.
As much as they say the comics have lost their value, I'm finding that the books that are worth money they're starting to climb again. It's those single issues you have to pay a lot for. The book I was looking for was Batman 357, and that's not a major issue. In fact, I didn't know it was a rare issue until it was just the next one I needed.
Right.
But it's the first appearance of Killer Croc and the first appearance of Jason Todd, but it's never been up on the wall of dealers. It's never been, I never see CGC stuff of it, but I only found two dealers that had it and they both wanted $100.
$100 for it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that would surprise me. It's, you know, maybe we are finally, with the economy improving, we're finally coming out of that era where, you know, you could go in with to a small con or even a large corporate con with a shovel and walk out with a long box worth of books for not much money.
Yeah, which I did at the first MightyCon we went to.
Yeah.
And, you know, now
that guy gave you a long box at MightyCon. He said, here, you're going to need a long box.
Now I have 26 long boxes, so maybe I should slow down. But and then on the flip side of no one was willing to haggle.
No.
Sunday night at 4:30, nobody wanted to come down on the price.
Nobody was marking down. I mean, usually at the booth, you can see like the crossed out, you know, 20% off becomes 30 or 40 or 50% off.
It didn't happen.
Nobody was doing that.
No, the people that came with sales, they maintained those sales. Like there were people that said everything in these boxes is 50% off. But they said that on Friday and they said that on Sunday. Yeah. Usually Sunday, people don't want to pack those long boxes up. And if you can take more off their hands, they're happy to give it to you. There were two or three dealers that had a book that was maybe $5 or $10 more than I wanted to pay. And I kept saying to you, wait till Sunday.
Yeah.
I came back Sunday. They weren't budging. And then some of those guys had just packed up.
Yeah, they were already shuttering down their booths. I mean, the other thing I noticed was that there, as we've talked about before, one of the changes has been the appearance of, you know, hardcovers and omnibuses and Marvel Masterworks and the DC equivalents. Those you could get really good deals on.
Some good deals.
Hardly anybody was selling those straight up. Almost everybody was at least 20% off. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them were half off of entire booths were half off of their hardcovers.
Yeah, we saw books 60-70% off. You got an Avengers omnibus for 55% off.
Right.
I got a Masterworks for 60% off.
I got Defenders Marvel Masterworks 1 and 2 cover price is $55. I got both of them for 30.
Yeah, it's interesting because I noticed it, the first C2E2, all I bought were hardcovers because it seemed like back then that first and the second show especially, everybody brought all their hardcovers and omnibuses, and people were doing 50%. And then that was the year that I bought an Absolute Sandman and an Iron Man omnibus, and then a bunch of premieres and Masterworks. I could barely walk with my backpack.
Yeah, I picked up your backpack. I'm like, what'd you get, a Tame Neutron Star in here?
But I was thinking at the time, I'm like, yeah, the industry has really gone to trades and graphic novels because that's what I'm seeing mostly. And this was the first year I saw more of the dealers that brought 30 long boxes and that you could go chronologically through each title.
Yeah.
And again, it took me back to the 90s because that's what everybody used to be. Like you wouldn't even find deals on trades back in the 90s.
No, because they were so new that everybody's like, oh, it's a trade.
Yeah, and it would usually be cover price, but somebody would have it.
Yeah.
You know, but everybody was about back issues. So I think you're right. I think the market is starting to turn. I don't know what it's turning into because, you know, digital is still such a force.
Yep.
And Marvel and DC are committed to taking everything that's an expensive issue and putting it in a trade.
Right.
Or a hardcover to satisfy that audience. You bought Amazing Spider-Man 194 in a trade today.
Exactly.
Just so you'd have it.
Yeah. And you know, you probably got the best deal with that Amazing Spider-Man 238.
I found a first Hobgoblin in poor condition for $4.
For $4.
No Lakeside Tattoo, but it was such a good deal that I forgot my promise to you to give it to you first because you don't have it. But I haven't seen deals like that in a while. I've also haven't seen such that's the other thing. I haven't seen such range of gradation.
Right.
Because what I got was a good, it wasn't even a very good, for $4. The last few years, people don't bring those out.
No.
It's been, I can CGC this. This is a 7, at least a very fine, because I'm going to get the money for it. And some guys were willing. It's interesting. I feel like we're saying contradictory things, but that was the range of the room.
Right.
Some guys were selling the first Hobgoblin for $4 in crappy condition. Some guys were not budging on $100 for the first Black Cat.
And there's, I think the people have figured out which Grail books. They figured out the condition. I think CGC has a lot to do with this change. The fact that people are now going back and looking at gradation in a way that maybe they haven't before, because now you've got a numerical system. Before, it was much more of a opinion. You go to your friend and go, is this in good condition? Or you go to if you happen to know the guy at the local comic store, you say, is this in good condition? There's a fold on this page. What does that do to it? Now you know precisely because of CGC. Because
that's what kept people from becoming managers at comic shops. I remember when I worked in a comic shop, and then that there was only so much I could do because I couldn't grade. Yeah. And I remember a friend of mine wouldn't take a job in a comic shop because they were so good at grading. And he's like, I don't, it was like a skill. It was like being a jeweler.
Yeah.
You know, being doing appraiser. Watch repair. Yeah. You were appraising books. And you're right. Now I can send it to CGC and they say 8.6.
Yep.
And then you know what to charge for it. Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of CGC for the same reason I open my action figures. If I can't see what's inside it,
right,
then I can't use it for its purpose intended, then I don't want it.
And the argument you're going to get is buy the trade.
Yeah, and I do.
Which we do, but you know, at a certain point, you also want to have that book. And it's not just the story. You can get the story in 10 different formats these days. It's all the things around it. Now, we had a conversation a little while ago. I like reading some of the ads. They take me back to that time when that issue was published in a way that few things can. Because when you're a kid and you're reading that comic, you're also looking at the ads too. You know, you're looking at what was popular, what the styles were, who the sports heroes were, who the music heroes were that show up in those ads.
Yeah, and my philosophy is a little different. Just I like to read everything. So say with Spider-Man, the omnibuses have the first two, but then there's a Roger Stern omnibus, which just came out, which is my favorite omnibus. I've been talking about it on the show for months because it's one of my favorite runs ever. It has the first Hobgoblin. It has Nothing Stops the Juggernaut. It has the first Black Costume. Yep. It's got great Vulture stories. Every issue is really good. It has the Kid Who Collected Spider-Man.
Yep.
So they came out with an omnibus of that. And as much as I love that, and I have that on my shelf, even though I have almost every issue in my collection, but part of me wants to read the issue that came before and the issue that came after.
That aren't going to be on omnibus.
Yeah, and they're not. Sometimes they're not even collected in a trade. Marvel's trying to do that with the Epic collections.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great idea. Steven's not that sold on it because he's like, I want everything in omnibus. And I'm like, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, they're not going to put out, you know, they're not going to start with one and just keep going on omnibus form.
Yeah, because nobody's going to spend $100 for the Tom DeFalco, Paul Ryan run of Fantastic Four.
Right. I mean, who's going to buy this, you know, the Spider-Girl omnibus? You know, a few people would. I probably would. Nobody else will.
And back issue sales had been so soft. And that's another thing I'm noticing is that the individual issues where something important happens, like those have been rising. But everything else, it used to be that whole run was worth money.
Yep.
Those are starting to soften because I found, say, Amazing Spider-Man and McFarlane. Amazing Spider-Man 300 with the first Venom, still $100 everywhere you looked. But you know what? 301, I found for $3. Yeah. And that used to be a $15 book.
Yeah, I mean, I could pick up the entire Korvac saga at C2E2. I could have probably picked that up in excellent condition for $20.
Yeah, I had the Untold Tales of Spider-Man omnibus. That's a $100 omnibus. Then about 6 months later, I was on eBay and I got the entire run for $20. Unless it's a key issue... key issues are on the rise. Everything else is starting to settle.
Yeah.
And then it's... And this con was a great example of dealer philosophy. Some guy thinks, I got a Batman 322 and it's worth $18 and that's what it's worth. And then a guy an aisle over goes, I got a Batman 322 and it's worth $10.
Yeah.
And it's the same condition. There's... Maybe it's... Maybe that's the development where we have CGC now, which tells you exactly what the price is. We no longer have a wizard. We no longer have the Overstreet guide.
Right.
We no longer have that price guide that is the gold standard that tells you what it's worth. And, you know, wizard and the Overstreet guide, they used to tell you every grade.
Right.
So, well, you know,
another thing is internet, because you used to have to wait for the Overstreet guide. One of the things that drives comic dealers crazy, or at least has driven comic dealers crazy, is somebody comes out with a 2-year-old Overstreet guide and says, my comic's worth this. Well, that was 2 years ago, buddy.
And a lot's changed.
Now we've got the internet. You can go on eBay and figure out what it's really worth really fast.
But the thing is, eBay is not the best barometer because there's so many factors. I look on a lot of single issues. If I can't find them at any convention, I'll go on eBay, and there's so many factors involved.
Yeah.
especially for comics. Comics seem more volatile because if I'm looking for, if I'm looking for an action figure that I've missed, like say, you know, everybody, you guys know I collect Hot Toys. Mm-hmm. I missed Agent Coulson, and the reason I missed Agent Coulson was when they announced him, he was like the 10th build cast member of Avengers. So nobody thought he was going to sell that well, so they ordered low. In between the pre-order and him coming out, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was announced.
Right.
So he went from being the low man on the totem pole in Avengers to the star of a Marvel show. So he disappeared.
Right.
Like, there was no... Pre-orders ate up everything. There was nothing on the shelves. I looked at the con. A lot of people couldn't find one. A lot of people had plenty of Hot Toys, and they had stuff that was a few years old. They didn't even have him for an inflated price.
Right.
But if you go on eBay, he always ends up at about the same, whether somebody has to buy it now or whether he gets bid up to it.
Yeah.
With comics, I've seen them go all over the place. I've seen a book go for $2, and then the next day it goes for $18 because two guys got into a fight. And It seems like dealers are looking at whatever on eBay they think is going to happen, and that's what they're pricing it for. So one guy's pricing an issue for $10, another guy's pricing it for $20, and that $20 guy won't come down.
And that kind of variation seems to hit the B and C titles more than the A, I've noticed, like Defenders. Mm-hmm. You can find people who have Defenders in very fine condition, and it's bagged and boarded and everything like that, an early issue, say number 4. And it's going to be anywhere from, you know, $20, $25. You go find that same issue in roughly the same condition, you know, loose somewhere, and they've got it for $2.
Yeah.
Whereas I think there's a much tighter range in the better known titles because people kind of, you know, there's a much more... Probably a fluid market for those.
Yeah, and they also haven't lost their value as much. I think older Marvels of the big characters have kind of held steady. I feel like Bronze Age Amazing Spider-Man never quite came down. You're always going to pay money for a John Byrne X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
Always. And
unless you're like me and you find the entire run for 50 cents at half price.
Did you?
Yeah, that was what got me, what launched me.
John Byrne Fantastic Four.
Oh, Fantastic. Oh, that's right. You're saying, oh, sorry.
No, John Byrne X-Men are still going to cost you.
Still going to cost you, that's right.
Yeah, but John Byrne Fantastic Four, you can find them at 50 cents. So I don't know, maybe we keep going back and forth. Maybe what we're trying to say is C2E2 is the biggest con in the area. So it's kind of our look into...
A Rorschach.
The world, yeah. Yeah, it's our litmus test of how the comics industry is. And I think what we're saying is, in terms of dealers, in terms of old back issues, it's volatile.
Yeah, well, I think it's also in transition. You know, I wonder...
The transition into what? Some things are flattening out and some things are shooting up.
Because we're trying to figure that out because... Yeah. You got so many things going on now. You have the rise of comic book movies, which you know... And now it's like every single summer. Before, in the 90s and even the 2000s to a certain extent, it was like, you know, every other summer or so, a big blockbuster comic. Now it's like, now we're up to like 2 a year.
No, we're up to 4 or 5.
Four or 5 a year. That's amazing. You know, you have the rise of digital. You have the rise of the omnibuses and the hardcovers and the trades and people writing for the trades and things like that. So, you know, you have... Print quality. I wonder how, because right now, a Byrne Fantastic Four, the actual issue, you're looking at ink on new, you know, bad ink job on newsprint,
right.
And they were and some of those guys were drawing around the fact that the coloring wasn't that great. Yeah. Now
there's a reason those books were 50 cents, and it's not just inflation,
right? Exactly. And now the books look so much better that even if you buy the omnibus, it's not going to look as much better than, say, omnibus of a Byrne Fantastic
Four. Comic, yeah.
For a modern comic.
Yeah. Yeah, modern comics is basically a straight-up reprint.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. What was your favorite part of the whole weekend, though? I feel like we've gone into each factor of it.
Oh, my favorite part of the weekend was Stan Lee. God, you gotta love that guy.
He really... Yeah, we didn't talk much about that, but he, you know, he was in the big room, filled up the big room... as you'd imagine, you know, my son was interested in seeing him because he knows him from all the movies.
Yep.
So he just maintained his character. And man, he just He brought everything you expected except his mustache.
Exactly, and he even talked about that, and he kept getting in trouble for it because he almost let something slip. Obviously, he was doing some kind of holographic thing with his mustache.
He said he shaved it off because there was a hologram, and then the Marvel lawyers got very upset.
Yeah.
So we don't know if that means for one of the movies or for
a video game.
For a video game, for some product.
Yeah.
So he let it slip at that, but apparently there was some kind of scanning that they couldn't read through his mustache.
Yeah.
So he shaved it, and he said everybody he knew says he looks better, but every fan goes, "Hey, where's your mustache?" But he was hilarious with everybody, and he was just like the sunny, you know, the sunny Stanley.
He's never stopped being, you know, that lovable huckster that, you know, he's very charismatic.
And he's clearly 90 years old. Yeah. I mean, it's like Christopher Lee. He's like, he's hunched over a little bit. He's, you know, he's not walking so fast. He's an old man, because I saw him in that Philly con in 96, and it was a different experience. You know, he was 15 years younger.
Yeah.
So was I. but you know, I went from 25 to 40.
Right.
He went from, you know,
70s to 90s.
75 to 90.
Yeah. But he's still sharp. I mean, he's got the sense of humor. Of course, you know, it helps that he's probably heard these same questions 1,000 times before, and he's got his answers down.
He told a lot of stories that I've read over and over and over again. Like, you know, and you can't begrudge the audience for the most part, because when an 11-year-old kid asks him how he came up with Spider-Man, it's great that he tells them. I mean, you and I have heard that story
100 times. Yeah,
100. And, you know, it's the same phrasing. It's the same wording. He knows how to tell that story. But he was also great off the cuff.
Oh, yeah. There were some. I mean, it helped that for a convention especially, the people who are asking questions were unusually well-behaved. There were very, very few long, rambling introductions to questions. I think they did a really good job of preparing the audience, of what not to do.
Like, they had an MC, which I hadn't seen in a panel before. They had a DJ playing, and then the MC was like, turn up your cell phones, and when you ask a question, just ask the question. Don't tell them how much you love them.
Yeah, you know, and then we already know that.
Of course, the second question was a guy doing exactly that.
Yeah. But he was like the only one. I mean, even the kids were like, here's my question. What did you think of this? And done. I was a little surprised at the last question. They let that kid up on stage to do his thing.
I would have. You know, it was the kind of situation where it's like, it just makes him look like a great guy. This kid was working on a school project for Stan Lee, and he asked Stan Lee to introduce it for his PowerPoint.
Yeah, and he spoke into the kid's smartphone.
Yeah, he's great about it. He let the kid up on stage, and he's like, I'm Stan Lee, and this is Cameron's PowerPoint on me! And it was...
It was perfect. I mean, he is underrated as an actor playing Stan Lee.
Personality is what he is. Because, you know, I grew up with that, with him on Spider-Man's Amazing Friends.
That's true.
That's what I have. And we did a YouTube short, which you can still find, called Stan Lee's Soap Box, where I did stop motion animation with Stan Lee and audio cut 17 introductions, so it was this long rambling introduction that made no sense and mentioned every character in the Marvel Universe. Just because as a kid I loved those so much.
Yeah.
That, you know, when, and they're completely unnecessary, but for a lot of shows, and also but in the 80s, every episode would open with, "Hey, true believer, Spider-Man's gonna fight somebody," and it's like, yeah, we saw the title card, he fights the Green Goblin. But he just brings such energy all the time.
Well, he's so enthusiastic. I mean, after 70 years, and, you know, you guys kind of went over this in a recent podcast, but, you know, like show business or athletics or anything else, comics is one of those businesses where it's a grind. It's a tough business. It's a nasty business sometimes. Yeah. Stan Lee hasn't always had the easiest time of it. You know, he had to fire people. He had to deal with people who didn't respect comics. He talked a little bit about that in the panel today. You know, he's spent 20 years failing to pitch movies because he couldn't get the right producer, or the wrong company was doing this, or the lawyers had this locked up and drove him crazy. So, you know, he, as a business, as an industry, it can be a shitty haul.
Yeah,
and he's still enthusiastic about it, though, because he really, you get the sense that he really, honest to God, deep in his bones, genuinely loves these characters.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you mentioned, because I was thinking the same thing during the Batman panel, of just how sophisticated it's been. This is the most legitimate the comics industry has ever been. And you know, I'm listening to guys like Scott Snyder and Pete Tomasi, who are, you know, they're of our generation, but there are guys that have, like, in the last 10 years or so have really come into it. And there's this, there is this absolute knowledge, there's this self-actualization they have that they work for these major corporations that have these huge licensed characters, and there's so much they can do with them, and there's so much they can't do with them, and there's certain things they can say and tease at a panel, and there's certain things they hold back, and they kind of know the rules of the game, and those rules were not in place like 20 years ago.
No,
I mean,
not
it was
all.
So fly by the seat of the pants.
You didn't need them, but and there's no, nobody has to hang their head in shame and say, I work for Marvel Comics. Back in the day, you know, way back in the day, you're like, oh, you're in the comics? You know, you were like one step, well, half step up from a pornographer, for
yeah.
Pete's sake.
Yeah, it was. It's so based in sleaze, and I think there's still that element to it when you walk the floor. I always get that element sometimes from the, you know, not everyone. I don't want to paint everyone's the same brush. But there's always like the small self-publisher or the couple of guys in Artist Alley that are just like, they're just kind of shilling and a little sleazy. And it's like, and there are times I'm like, there are so many times I'm like, oh, why are you in comics? Comics is all about kids and enjoying and fantasy. And why are you making this dirty? But then when you read, you know, when you read these books like Marvel Comics, The Untold Story of Minute Tomorrow, you're like, nah, that's kind of where it was born. We're, you know, the audience was innocent.
Right.
But the people creating it never were.
Oh, no, far, far from it. Well, they, you know, they were publishing and newspaper business and anything like that where you had a rotating mm-hmm. cash supply was always going to bring in a certain, you know, criminal element looking to launder their stuff. And a lot of the early comics publishers were number one, they were publishing everything, not just comics, but they were
just
mobsters.
Trying to put stuff on paper because they had paper.
Yeah, and they, you know, they were hip deep with mobsters and things like that. Mm-hmm. You read Tomorrow Man, it's all about that thing.
Yeah. So, overall, you know, we've been to every C2E2. This is number four. How did you feel?
I felt good. You know, I felt like it was getting more focused, more back to its roots. Some of the excesses had been weeded out, and yet it's still big enough so that you could, if you're willing to pay for it, you could find anything you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Joe, thanks for coming with me.
Oh, thanks.
And thanks for coming back with me, because everyone was way too exhausted. all of our regulars basically agreed to do this, and then as we were coming back.
And then
back,
they got 2 hours of sleep in the last 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're groggy, as is now. But as always, you can follow me at Not In My Book. That is the Twitter handle for Caffeinated Comics. Like us on Facebook. As I say, we've got a lot of cosplay pictures from C2E2. Going to put up some more tonight, things that we took today. We try to keep up to date with everything that's going on through that page, even more than Twitter. Twitter is mostly just me talking to you and trying to tell jokes about the news. But but the Facebook page is really the hub. Subscribe and tell your friends. All we ever hear are nice things about this podcast, and we'd love to hear that from as many people as possible. Joe, your Twitter?
My Twitter is ZenMasterGuy at Twitter, and if John posts the picture of me peeking out of the TARDIS, be sure to like it.
Oh, that's a great picture. It's going up on Facebook. And if that is not your Facebook picture, I'm going to punch you.
Uh-oh.
Steven, I think, is going to sleep in tomorrow. But normally, you can find him at Chimera's Comics, which
19
is...
19 South LaGrange Road.
LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!